You could be forgiven for having mixed feelings about this next conversation on Sunday Extra, because on the one hand, it's a great pleasure to be speaking with someone from the pantheon of ABC journalism, seven-time Walkley Award winner Tony Jones. But on the other hand, the subject we're discussing is challenging and to some extent distressing. Sentient is the new documentary film written and directed by Tony that investigates the history and current practice of scientific testing on primates. It's confronting and thought-provoking because it conveys both the grim realities of testing on monkeys and other primates and their suffering, even when done with some regard for animal welfare, but also the medical achievements and the vast elimination of human suffering that's also associated with at least some of this research. Sentient was selected to screen at Sundance earlier this year, and it's on at the Melbourne International Film Festival on the 11th and 13th of August. One thing you don't get in the movie, except for one fleeting off-camera moment, is something that you will be getting now, which is to listen to the familiar and dulcet tones of Tony Jones. Tony, welcome to Sunday Extra.
G'day, Julian. It's lovely to be here.
You've said it was a comment from Peter Singer on Q&A that led you to this topic. What did he say and where did that take you?
Yeah, he was sitting next to me on the Q&A panel and someone asked, obviously, Peter Singer, so you're going to ask questions about animal liberation, etc. And there was a general question about how we are going to feel about what we do with animals in a whole variety of spaces. And Singer said something that stuck in my head for a long time. He said, in the future, we'll start to think about how we treat animals in the same way that we think now about how we treated human slaves in the 17th, 18th, and even into the 19th century. So it was a controversial thing to say, equating animals and people doesn't really work for most of us, but nonetheless, it got me thinking, and I started doing research on the sentience of animals, and really that means, do they have feelings and emotions? And I started down this path and has ended up with this film.
And there's no question that the animals that you focus on in the film are sentient on any definition. What's shocking is the scale of the practice of scientific testing. Could you give us a sense of the nature of the testing and the scale of it today?
Yeah, the scale of it we'll start with, because it shocked me and it shocks everyone who sees the film to realize there is this, I guess we describe it now as an animal industrial complex. So what happens is with monkeys, for example, because monkeys replace chimpanzees when they banned this kind of experimentation on chimpanzees, they double down on monkeys because they're the closest animal to us. Their DNA levels remarkably close to humans and very close to chimps. So they started pulling monkeys out of forests in places where they live, particularly in Southeast Asia, and putting them in these giant breeding facilities, which look to me like concentration camps. They are massive. The one we focus on, one of the many that's in Cambodia, can take 80 to 100,000 animals. So you have these giant facilities full of monkeys. And what's supposed to happen is the next generation of monkeys bred in captivity are then sent off to laboratories around the world. And the process actually is remarkably similar to slavery in some respects, because they're taken from parts unknown in Southeast Asia and parts of Africa and other places. They're put in these kind of boxes, little coffin-like boxes, and they're transported for up to 30 hours, and then they arrive at a laboratory. And right in early on in our film, you see these boxes arriving at a testing laboratory. This one is in the UK. The box is opened up and they start pulling out these animals that have been confined for a long period of time. And incredibly, one of them escapes from its handlers, who are all dressed in PPE gear. And you see this monkey have this fleeting moment of freedom where it's leaping over their heads and jumping around in the laboratory. And it's a kind of nice metaphor, because the freedom only lasts for 30 seconds until they capture the thing and they catch it. And then it goes into the system. And the system is the testing of drugs and substances on these animals, sometimes to the degree of poisoning them to death. But even if you aren't poisoned to death in these testing laboratories, you're not going to survive it anyway, because at the end of testing on these animals, which is done in a variety of ways, the animals are killed, their organs are taken to investigate what impact the medicine or substance has. So that's how testing works. And it's a massive, very expensive, pharmaceutical industries are involved, you know, multi-billions of dollars are involved in this system.
One of the key people in Sentient is Dr. Lisa Jones-Engel, a primatologist turned animal welfare advocate. I wonder if you could tell us about her, and also another person who typifies the dilemmas that you explore, Jim Mahoney.
Yeah, well, Lisa, let's talk about her first, because her story is the kind of narrative arc of our film. By the way, I should mention, for anyone who's interested in coming to see the film at the Melbourne International Film Festival during the week, that's Tuesday and Thursday, Lisa will be there. She's coming all the way to participate in the Q&As afterwards. And so anyone who wants to ask questions about her motivation, we'll be able to do that directly. She started as a very young woman, the age of 16. She decided she wanted to work with animals, and she was inspired, in fact, by Jane Goodall, and she wanted to work in the field with apes or monkeys. And she wrote to all the primatologists around the world who were doing that kind of work, and one of them wrote back and said, please come and join us. She ends up in the jungles of Borneo. And that's the beginning of a long career that takes her through animal testing laboratories, where they're testing vaccines, hepatitis, and HIV vaccines on chimpanzees. And we get to see that because, amazingly, the people who worked in that facility when Lisa was a very young woman filmed an awful lot of what was going on inside the facility. So you see what's happening at that time to chimpanzees before it was banned. She has this incredible level of guilt about what she has done to animals. First of all, the chimpanzees, and then the monkeys that she spent most of her time researching in the field, capturing monkeys, sedating them, taking samples from them, causing them pain. And that pain and suffering that she put the animals through has caused, as I said, a great level of guilt in her, to the point where she finds she has an epiphany, which is actually one of the most interesting and beautiful moments in the film, because we see that moment of epiphany where she decides she cannot do it anymore. And it's all related to mother-child bonding, mother-infant bonding. And she reflects, now that she's had her own children, what am I doing taking these little animals away from their mothers, taking these infants away from their mothers? And she decides she can't do it anymore. And she becomes an activist, trying to close down the very primate center in the University of Washington in Seattle that she worked in for 17 years. And now she's devoting her life to closing down that and all the primate centers in the United States. And by the way, her campaign seems to be working.
Yes, we'll come to that. Tell us also about Jim Mahoney.
Jim Mahoney was the guy who was running the LEMSIP testing laboratory for chimpanzees back in the 1970s and 80s. And he becomes the mentor of our young Lisa Jones-Engel. And she remembers for the rest of her life that he's his own guilt at what he's doing to these animals, which you see, by the way, because, you know, ABC TV back then, you know, did a documentary about him, and we see him struggling with what he's doing. You know, I know we have to do this because we're trying to create vaccines, you know, for HIV and for other things. So what we're doing is really important, but I really struggle with the concept of doing it because I'm hurting these animals. I'm taking them away from their mothers. I'm putting them in little nurseries and then basically building them up to the point where they can be test subjects for these vaccines, which in itself is a kind of painful and difficult process. And you see all of that, and you see his guilt, and somehow he transfers his guilt to Lisa, and she remembers for the rest of her life what the lessons that he had. And by the way, when he gets to the end of his life, he decides that everything he's done is wrong. One of his final points is, you know, he can't be right because the first thing we did wrong was to put them in cages.
That's the conclusion he comes to at the end of his career and his life. When he's interviewed during his career, he says, I don't think this is ethical, but it is necessary.
Yeah.
And that gets, I think, to the crux of the issue. Tony, what's your assessment of the contribution that animal testing has made to improvements in human health and the elimination of suffering? And how do you measure that against the suffering of the test subjects?
Yeah, so this is, in effect, the core of the film. We try to be empathetic not only to the animals, but to the people who are doing the work, because pretty much everybody in our film is a scientist or researcher who works with animals. And we find that they, all of them, like Lisa, carry with them a lot of guilt for what they're doing. But the overriding principle is we're doing this for the greater benefit of humankind. And so we have had tremendous benefits from the work done on animals. The polio vaccine is one we highlight in the film, which actually ended polio as a disease around the world. Of course, there are numerous other vaccines. All of them were tested on animals. It's not only vaccines, it's pretty much every medicine that you have, and every therapy, every medical therapy. And look, I rely on medicines. I haven't stopped taking medicines. But I think the hope at the end of the tunnel of this kind of horrible system is that you can get out of it. New science is bringing us ways to do everything we did with animals, but without animals. And the big question is the pharmaceutical industry going to re-gear, reinvest in non-animal methods? They are increasingly available. And, you know, within a relatively short space of time, you could imagine not having to do anything with animals like we are at the moment.
Yes, in terms of non-animal methods, one of the memorable phrases from the film is a kidney on a chip. What's a kidney on a chip? And I suppose the practical question is, how realistic at the moment, or on what time frame could it be that different methods could replace the animal testing that's still occurring?
You know, once you've invested in a massive system, you know, that includes testing laboratories and people doing that work, and, you know, starts off with these giant breeding facilities in different countries, in Southeast Asia, for example, it's kind of hard to retool, or to even to imagine retooling. But the technology is increasingly becoming available to do that. The kidney on a chip is basically cells of a kidney inside a little plastic chip through which they pass the substances, and you can test what effect these substances have on kidneys. Well, there are many organs now where you can do that. There are hearts on a chip, there are livers on a chip, there are lungs on a chip, even mini brains on a chip. And the idea is ultimately you'll be able to have an entire human body replicated through these new methods. You combine that with artificial intelligence, which takes all the data gained over decades and decades from every animal experiment that ever happened, and you find you can much more quickly go to compounds that are not going to affect the human body. So the point about it is, the system as it exists now doesn't really work very well, even though we're getting medicines. The incredible fact is, and everyone agrees with this, the scientists and the advocates for stopping this, the activists, of the medicines and substances tested on animals successfully, so they work on animals, 90 to 95% of them fail when they're put into human trials. So there's this massive failure rate. With these new methods, scientists believe they will have a much, much lower failure rate. So we will see many more new medicines, and we'll see them more quickly. It's all a matter of reinvestment, changing the incredible culture around animal testing and animal research. And that's going to take a while, Julian, to be honest with you. The guy who is making the kidney on a chip, he says, look, it's the moonshot that we get to the point where we don't need to use animals anymore. Right now, we're in low Earth orbit. We've got a little way to go yet, but it requires a big investment.
In terms of that failure rate, it is an arresting statistic. But isn't it also the case that all medical research has a very high failure rate, and without that testing, you would have fewer successful medical drugs for humans?
Oh, look, there's no question about that. And, you know, I take medicines now. I actually have diabetes too. So I take medicines which have been tested on animals, and they're necessary for my continued survival. This is true of everybody to one degree or another. I mean, no one's going to want the options for their children getting cancer medicines or whatever. If your child had leukemia, is a woman actually who's in our film, and she worked within the biomedical industry for many years, called Dr. Cindy Buckmaster. And she's talking to the animal testers, the people who are feeling the guilt about the way they treat animals. And she's saying to them, listen, you are the reason that a six-year-old with leukemia gets to be seven. And so there's a very strong motivation. We're trying to save the world. But Here's the thing. The scientists who are working on the alternative methods say we'll get to these medicines more quickly and the medicines will be more effective if only you reinvest and do it this way. And look, that's the great irony of the of this film. I think one of the particularly when we're in Sundance and had American audiences, they're going, the people who are kind of proposing a quick move away from using animal research include RFK.
Yes, yeah, well, that could be another confronting aspect of this film, is that he sort of emerges as not quite a hero, but somebody who's strongly opposed to animal research. How much has he actually changed things in the US?
Quite a lot, because what's happened is he's changed the people at the top of the big funding agencies. For example, the National Institute of Health, which provides most of the money for the big research institutions who do research on animals, is trying to change the culture itself, trying to say, well, we're not going to automatically fund animal testing anymore or animal research anymore, because we want to fund the parts of science that don't use animals, the non-animal methods. We want to accelerate that process. And weirdly, you put, you know, the mad RFK aside for a moment, some of the people within those institutions whose ideas had been held back by the more traditional scientists for long periods of time have now come to the fore. So there's a woman in the National Institute of Health who's now in charge of moving away from animal testing. She's actually running the show now, and she's saying, look, I've been doing this for years and years and years, and no one's been listening to me. And now they're listening to me, and I've got the chance to accelerate the move away from the use of animals in research, and I'm going to do it. She's very sympathetic to people like Lisa Jones Engel, to be honest with you. She's not from the RFK, you know, group of loonies. So these are people within these institutions who now have the power to see their ideas put into practice.
Tony, this film is your directorial debut, which is another way of saying that you're not in it. There's no presenter. There's no voiceover. Why that choice, and what did you get from the process of directing?
Well, I've always loved filmmaking. Right from the very first moment I went into television, I was plucked out of radio and put into the Four Corners program. And, you know, I thought that the techniques of filmmaking that we were using back then are very similar to what we use in making documentaries. The difference is no voiceover, no reporter-led story. So I thought it was important with a story like this that the experts themselves, the people who really know what they're talking about, are the ones that tell us the story. It makes the storytelling more difficult, because you have to craft the story around what people are saying, structure it around what people are saying, and encompass the whole thing. It'd be a lot easier to do it with voiceover. But I think it's successful in terms of the method. Most documentaries do not have kind of reporter-led voiceover. This is not a David Attenborough film, very far from it. It's not anti-Attenborough either, because David Attenborough in his, you know, later years has decided to make films about climate change and their effect on animals and overfishing and its effect on, you know, the animals that live in the sea. The fish,
aka,
for example, but he won't ever touch this world because it's too confronting. So there was a space for us here. So I'm proud of the film. I think it deserves an audience. I think people should not be scared about coming to see this film. We very carefully crafted the film so that it's not the horrors you might see if you accidentally flick onto, you know, an animal rights YouTube video and you see, you know, terrible things. You will feel things for the animals. And I think that's what the film does. And good films are kind of a machine to express emotion. And I think that out of this film, you will feel by the end of it quite strong emotions about the little childlike animals kept in their cages and poisoned. And ultimately, you know, to the end of their lives, you will feel things for them, but you won't be horrified by what you see. So that's why I think it's really important to encourage people to come along to see this film. I'm a bit surprised it has an R rating at the moment. I think that's a temporary thing, to be honest with you. I think when it goes out to cinemas, which it's going to do around the country briefly, that it won't hopefully have an R rating. Because I would actually like young people to see this film, because, you know, it's about the planet, just like climate change is about the planet. It's about what we do to the animals who live alongside us.
Yes, it certainly will get you thinking and feeling. Tony, there's also a sort of thorny issue that pops up at the end of Sentient. If primate testing ends, What happens to all those primates who are part of this industrial complex that you've described?
It's a really interesting question, because what's happening right at the moment is, as I said, I think earlier on, that Lisa Jones Engel's campaign and the campaign of the organization she works for, PETA, it's actually proving to be quite successful. So, as I said, she worked in the Seattle laboratory at the University of Washington. As you see in the film, it's now under pressure. They don't know whether they're going to survive. In the state immediately below them, there's a big primate center in Oregon, and the university there has decided it's going to close it down. And so they're now in the process of working out what happens to the animals. What Sally Thompson-Iratani, who runs the animal welfare part of the Seattle institution, says, we're going to have to kill all of our animals. Well, obviously, Lisa and others don't think that's the best idea. They want them put into sanctuaries, which in fact is what happened to the chimpanzees who were taken out of testing. So in the United States, the federal government funds sanctuaries for chimpanzees who've been part of the testing regime. And that's what the animal rights organizations want to happen to the monkeys. But we'll see whether that happens or not, because, for example, just the monkeys in Oregon, someone's going to have to invest $100 million to build sanctuaries to keep these animals for the rest of their lives. So I think unlikely. I think probably when these places close down, they will kill the animals.
Tony, it's been great discussing Sentient with you. It's screening at the Melbourne International Film Festival on the 11th and 13th of August, and it sounds like it might be coming to cinemas near you soon as well. Thank you so much for joining us on Sunday Extra.
Mate, it's a pleasure to be here.
Find more great ABC RN stories that take you beyond the headlines on the ABC Listen app.